Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is your show. If you've got questions you'd like to hear answered, if you've got a topic you want to hear a bit more about, please go ahead and give me a call, 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab, send us that question, that topic you'd like to hear more about, because we would love to hear from you. Folks, this week on Money Matters, I am joined, as always, in studio by my wonderful co-host, Andrew Rogers. Andrew, how are we doing this week?
Doing great. How are you doing, Rick?
You know, I'd be doing better if I'd scored a few more points in my fantasy football last week against my co-host.
Well, I was about to say, wait a minute. Who'd you lose to?
Yeah. That might be my co-host by about 40, I think it was, last week. Somewhere in that ballpark. But, hey, you know what the good news is? We might both be better than Kyle, so we can throw that one out there because I know he's listening today to hear about that. Folks, this week on Money Matters, we're going to talk about some of those common mistakes that folks make with their investments. And before I dive too far into the bad decision side of things, Andrew, I was actually listening to you guys this morning as I'm driving in, which is what I'm supposed to do, right? And the Bloomberg Money Minute was actually talking some very important investing and retirement sort of things, not the least of which is, I believe it said somewhere around 57% of folks are not where they want to be in their retirement portfolios. They're not on track, and only 25% are doing anything about it.
That seems like a widespread.
Yes. Yeah, it seems a little bit odd to me that you would look at this and go, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm not going to make any changes.
Yeah, that's like, you know, saying, hey, I'm out of gas, but I'm just going to sit here on the side of the road twiddling my thumbs.
I've got 10 miles to empty, according to my onboard, but you know what? I'm gonna pass a few of these because I know there's cheaper gas at an exit further down the road.
Yeah.
That I may or may not make it to. You know what it's also like? It's also like giving up 35 points in the first half and not making a change on your defense to give up another 35 in the second.
Well, why do you need to make a change when you know the other team's just going to pull out all their starters and even their scrubs might continue to put up some points as well?
Yeah. It's sort of like even whenever you're playing so poorly, the other team pulls out their starting QB, and he just wants to come back in just to inflict a little more pain, because it's not like that happened with the Bears and Mahomes over the weekend, or maybe a little game down in Miami that happened either.
I know. It's rough. It's tough. And it's only going to get worse because this weekend the Bears and Broncos play in one of those games that unfortunately somebody's going to have to win.
In theory, technically it could be a 0-0 tie after overtime and nobody wins.
We could have, we could have two historic
We could. We could also, and I've actually started the petition to the NFL for this week, to just have the Bears-Broncos games flexed off the schedule. Let's just not play that one this week.
This one could be a good case for relegation.
Yes.
The loser ends up in the SEC and we bring up the top team from the SEC trying out in the NFL.
That might not be such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Out there. But let's talk about some of those ideas, those mistakes, those things that are bad ideas mm-hmm. for folks, Andrew. There are a lot of different things that I see when I'm sitting down working with folks, when I'm just talking to people about different things. There are a lot of what I would probably call common mistakes, things that I see people make often.
Yeah, and let's get into some of those common mistakes, and let's bring up that kind of topical reference as well, that, you know, a lot of people not doing enough as far or thinking that they have enough in their retirement accounts, but even fewer actually doing something about it. So what's some of those common mistakes as far as even setting up those accounts and setting up that planning for the future?
The big piece in there, more often than not, is folks thinking, oh, you know what? I can do that later. I'll take care of that later. Mm-hmm. And especially those folks that are in those 20s, 30s, out there in those first jobs. And you know, based on the cost of everything in life these days, we know that we need every piece of that paycheck coming in possible. Mm-hmm. We need those dollars to be able to live. And in our 20s and 30s, we're thinking, you know what, I'll wait until my next raise, or I'll wait until my next job, or I'll wait until XYZ happens. Then I will start contributing to a retirement. And one of the things I always tell folks, always, is when it comes to putting money away for retirement, there are two variables.
Mm-hmm.
They are 100% inverted in how they affect what you can put away, what you'll have, that pile of money whenever you're ready to retire. And they are time and money.
Yeah.
Because if you are in your 20s and you've got 40 years until you actually are going to need this, fully funding something as easy as a Roth IRA, which, you know, in your 20s has a $6,500 limit, that's $541 a month. And I understand, yes, in my 20s, $541 a month, that's a lot of money, mm-hmm. right? That's a lot of stuff that I could be spending elsewhere. But if I'm out there and I am spending that $541 a month, and let's say we're going to do this for argument's sake. If you look back over the last 100 plus years, your S&P 500 is basically at that point in time averaging about 12% per year annual growth.
Okay.
And again, it's the average, right? We're not a guaranteed 12% on any given year. But if you take that over time, we take that over time, and, you know, I like to be conservative about these pieces as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm starting at zero and I'm putting away $541 a month, and let's say I only average 10% over those 40 years, Andrew, how does about $3.5 million sound? Does that sound like a decent number?
That does. I mean, that's a little surprising.
That's pretty good money. Mm-hmm. And I always love the question Dave Ramsey asks, right? What if I'm half wrong? Well, it's still about $1.7 million
yeah.
when we get 40 years out. So when you have time on your side, it doesn't take a lot of money in the big picture. Because over those 40 years, at $541 a month, you've put away $259,000. Grown at 10%, you've grown it by $3.2 million over that time frame.
Wow.
That's not too bad.
No.
That's not too bad at all.
And then kind of with that, and with that setting up that retirement plan, especially early, I can remember back to, you know, my first quote-unquote grown-up job.
Yep.
You have the 401k.
Right.
But then you have, you know, the representative from the company coming in, doing their, you know, presentation, helping set it up once a year. And they talked real fast, really glazed over. And is it also fair to assume that a lot of people who maybe even are, you know, have that set up through their company are just doing the bare minimum and not really taking advantage of all the other benefits that they could have to maximize that, knowing that even though it might be a tiny bit more, but they do have time on their side and can make such an exponential difference?
Yeah, it's one of those things that as I'm working with folks, I always tell them, if your company offers a match, do what you have to get that match.
Mm-hmm.
In some companies, it's a, you know, a dollar for dollar up to a certain percentage of your income you're putting away. Sometimes it's 3, sometimes it's 5. There are some companies out there that still do dollar for dollar up to 10% of your actual income that you've put away. So in any given month, I do the back of the envelope math easy. If you're making $1,000 a month and you put away $100, that's 10%. But if the company's doing a dollar for dollar match on that 10%, you put $100, they put $100, without anything in the market, you've already doubled your money, right? Money has gone in just as much as you've put in. So we always, at the very least, want to be able to get that match. We want to be able to take advantage. You know, some folks call it free money. I call it free growth, right? It's free growth of your money as you're putting that in there. Because if you look at it free money, then you don't worry about it too much. But if you look at it as free growth, now that becomes a little more personal.
Yeah. Or if you're, you know, maybe more on the pessimistic side, knowing what we've had a couple years, it's a hedge against the loss as well. Because
exactly,
if the market drops by, you know, say 4%, that 4% that the boss puts in versus you,
yeah,
that, you're just losing the boss's money. You're still getting yours in there untouched.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's, you know, kind of that little psychological game we can play with ourselves through there. One of those other things that I try to encourage folks to do is when you sit down at your annual review and they've said, hey, Andrew, congratulations. We're giving you a 50-cent raise. And, you know, you say, is that per hour? And they say, no, we're just giving you an extra 50 cents. Take 40 of those cents and put that towards your retirement, right? Take a portion of whatever that raise is. Yes, give yourself a raise. You've worked hard. You deserve it. You need that money probably at home. But take a portion of that as well. Add that into what you're putting away so that, yes, you still get a raise, but you're also increasing what you're putting away into your retirement plans.
Yeah, so it kind of grows with your income.
Exactly. Exactly. And that way you're also not looking at it, because I know a lot of folks who have said, you know what, I take my full raise and put it away. Well, after 4 or 5 years of that, you're going to start thinking, I've not gotten a raise in 4 or 5 years, when, yeah, you have. You've just put it all away. You've not used any of it for yourself. You've not allowed yourself, if you will, to actually use any of those dollars along the way. You'll start to think about, well, I don't want to do this, and I'm just going to totally cut off my funding.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to another common mistake
that
folks make, and that is making that rash emotional decision. I know that you might find this hard to believe, but money is an emotional thing.
Really?
I know.
First I've ever heard of it.
I'm sure. I'm sure it is. And when it comes to money, we do make a lot of emotional decisions. We sometimes make that, you know, based on the whole idea of, you know, oh my goodness, the market's falling, I've got to sell everything. Mm-hmm. That's illogical and rash, because as we know, Dave Ramsey says quite often, the only people that get hurt on the roller coaster are the ones that jump off, right? Jumping off that roller coaster, not a good idea. That also is the 180-degree concept behind what it takes to make money in investing, right? Making money investing, very simple, buy low, sell high.
Mm-hmm.
But as we see the market pull back, as we see the value of those investments headed down, we start to freak out, go, oh no, I got to get rid of this because it's on its way down. Well, now we're selling low instead of buying low. And we technically, most likely, bought high in that point, because we see the market going up and it's, you know, it's that,
that FOMO.
The FOMO piece, right? We don't want to miss out. Oh my goodness, look at how this is going. I got to do it right now. No, let's stop. Let's think it through. Let's be rational about it. Because one of the things that I have discovered over time is those folks that really say, oh, I got to pull out of this, I got to get rid of it right now. Because markets are headed down, folks get scared, they sell. It takes them about 18 months before they're ready to put money back in.
Mm-hmm.
In that 18-month period, 9 times out of 10, they would have recovered to what they were down in that time frame. But because they didn't, because they didn't put that money back in, and we talked about this actually a couple of weeks ago, that whole timing the market versus time in the market, riding those ups and downs, they actually end up missing out on that growth that would have brought them back up, And now they're started in that next cycle, and they're not getting the growth they need in their overall investments.
Yeah, and, you know, to quote another smarter, more successful person when it comes to this, you know, Warren Buffett always says, too, that if he sees a lot of people running out of something, that's where he's cued to jump in. So
exactly.
It's, you know, kind of that counterintuitive and really taking all emotion out of it and running more logical, which is, granted, tough to do.
Yes.
But could be very beneficial in the long run.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of those things. It's also one of those pieces where if you're looking at what that investment is or those investment options, just because something is going really, really well, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right choice for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is where that mistake comes in, or where folks don't think about their risk tolerance properly.
Okay.
You know, if we look back at the beginning of 2023, the big movers in the market were all tech companies, right? You're talking tech companies that are up 30, 40, 50%. You could even see some right now if you were to go in and take a look at, I'll take Tesla as an example. And if you just do the year-to-date on Tesla and their stock price, Andrew, do you know what Tesla is up since January
1? Not a penny. I would maybe guess, what, 25-ish percent?
You'd be close.
Okay.
It's up 125%.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
close.
I'm just dancing right
digit.
Around it.
One digit. It happened to be a one in front, but it was a digit.
Well, I'm sorry, because I guess I keep hearing all the, you know, headlines and all the negatives. So that's just kind of where my mindset goes, that, oh, yeah, it might have gone up, but now we're seeing that kind of pullback.
Yeah, and in fact, in the last 5 days where we're recording now, Tesla is down a little over 5.5% in the last 5 days. But since January 1, it's up almost 125%. But that's also very high risk.
Mm-hmm.
And for those folks that don't need to be in that really high risk sort of category, you can look at that and go, oh, man, I missed out on Tesla. Well, yeah, but, because there's always that yeah, but, Tesla might not be something you should have been in, because maybe you're 68, you retired 3 years ago, your money doesn't need to be at that kind of a risk level.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look over, you know, the last year, literally the last 12 months from today, Tesla is down almost 15% in the last 12 months.
Okay.
Even though since January it's way up, it's still down double digits over the last year. So those are those pieces where, as we're working with folks, as we're sitting down talking about all these different component parts, that we've really got to consider, and it's that piece oftentimes that folks don't consider enough, especially as they are either A, in those younger years, mm-hmm. and they've got that time on their side, or B, as they are closing in on those retirement years and they're still in that very aggressive sort of a portfolio, thinking, oh, you know what, we just came out of a beautiful 10-year bull run. It's been a growth market for, you know, the last decade. Well, I might have a bad year, but hey, we can grow for a decade. Not necessarily the case. We've got to realize what that risk really looks like to us.
Yeah, and that goes back to, you know, kind of that long-term outlook as well, too, and not just being ruled by the day-to-day, the markets, the, you know, present company excluded, the follically challenged gentleman with a buzzer on the TV.
I have no buzzer. There are no bells, nothing going off
like
that.
Yeah, the whole cartoon of it, the whole buy, sell, you know, trying to get that emotional day-to-day thing. That's where you have to have that long-term view where, yeah, Tesla may be volatile, but still, as you mentioned, since the beginning of the year, up pretty well. So if you just can tune that out and just, again, maybe Ron Popeil said it and forget it, you're going to probably be okay in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, you're going to be okay in the grand scheme of things. But that also runs into the thing that sometimes we'll get to folks, is they thought about it from that Ron Popeil perspective back in their 20s, and now they've hit their 60s, and they have totally forgotten about it. They're not coming back each year to revisit, am I still in the right risk level?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those other pieces. I actually spoke with some folks a couple of months ago who were in that mindset of, oh, we set this up 10 years ago. I've still got 10 more years till I'm going to use it. We don't need to talk about the allocations. We don't need to talk about risk. We're just going to leave it. And that's where I said, actually, that's exactly why we need to talk about the risk, because you set that up 10 years ago. And then the last 10 years, we haven't done any looking at the risk. We absolutely, this is sort of that, you know, I got a cut on my arm, but, you know, it's not too bad. I'm not going to worry about, it might be deep enough for a stitch, but I'm not going to worry about that. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'll just put some Neosporin on it or something. And you come back a week later and go, well, that's still not exactly closed up yet, but I'm not going to worry too much about it. And you get too far down the line and not worrying about it, it can become a very big problem.
Yeah, you can't just ignore it. So I guess that's the question then. You know, what is that kind of schedule for looking at those allocations and, you know, kind of making those tweaks?
So from that advisor perspective, when I'm working with folks, we sit down at least, okay. and there's the at least once a year.
Okay.
I will reach out to say, hey, it's time to sit down, time to go back over this. Because, hey, if everything is good and everything is working the way we need it to, we want it to, we don't have to make changes.
Okay.
But the last thing that I need to have happen is to sit down with somebody and they say, oh, you know what? About a month after we sat down last year, I lost my job and I haven't been working for the last 11 months. And we've been drawing out of this, that, and the other. Well, we needed to know that 11 months ago. So we could have made some changes or adjustments then to how things were running. Or it's, oh, I forgot to tell you, 6 months ago, I actually left this job, went to that job, and I actually doubled my salary, but I'm still putting that small amount away. I'm still putting the same dollar amount from the previous job away. And we haven't had the opportunity to talk about, well, what will this do to that long-term plan mm-hmm. in there? Or there are folks that I have had over the years who have said, oh, you know what? I know that the last time we sat down and talked, I said I was probably 5 or 6 years from retirement. But, you know, a couple months after we sat down, this classmate of mine passed away and this guy that I knew from college passed away. And I decided, you know what? Life's too short. I'm just going to retire now.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit of information we need to talk about.
Yeah, you got to figure that out. And then kind of with that inverse as well, is there ever a case where people could be maybe tweaking with their accounts or allocations too much? I mean, I kind of look at it as, you know, I love to barbecue on the weekends.
Right.
There's that old adage that if you're looking, you're not cooking. And is uh-huh. that could that also kind of translate over towards those accounts and allocations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because ultimately what folks are doing when they are going in and you know, changing this and changing this and changing this and changing this and making all those changes all over the place, I tell folks, as an advisor, as an asset manager, mm-hmm. I make adjustments to a portfolio twice a year.
Okay.
Once in January, once in June, July. And it's not because there's a special time of year to do this, that, and the other. It's to say, okay, January, this is what the outlook for the year ahead is. So if I'm in a conservative growth portfolio that's that 60% equity, 40% fixed income, this is what I want that mix to look like. Okay, 6 months into the year, is everything working the way we thought it should? Do I maybe need to adjust, say, the different bond exposures? Maybe I don't need bank loan bonds in there. Maybe instead I need some what we call core plus bonds, or I need corporate bonds, or maybe I need to go to a long-term bond rather than a short-term bond. And we'll make some little tweaks that way. But if you're in there trying to make those changes daily, weekly, even monthly, you can actually change out all of the growth you would have had, because oftentimes those are the folks that are going, oh, well, this thing did really great this week. I'm going to buy it. Well, what was really great this week is not always really great next week.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, chasing that shadow.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, every once in a while, you just want to see that that groundhog once a year,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't check with Punxsutawney Phil every month to see what the weather's doing. We just check in February
yeah.
to see what those next 6 weeks are going to be like.
Perfect.
Well, folks, we are up against that first break in today's show. When we come back, we will continue talking about some of those common mistakes that folks make in their investment management portfolios. Stick around. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break. Rick Stevens here, your host on Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group, in studio with Andrew Rogers. We are talking this week about those mistakes, about those bad decisions, not just made by Sean Payton and Matt Eberflus over the past weekend, and we're going to see them, those guys, together on Sunday this week, if we can stomach it. But, Andrew, we're talking about bad decisions that a lot of folks make in their investment lives. And one of those things that I oftentimes see are the folks who aren't thinking about the long term. They're too focused on whether that's the last month, the last quarter, the last year, and not thinking about that big picture in the whole process.
Okay, and kind of with that in mind, then, you know, if people, because it's easy just to kind of look at that, you know, short term, you know, what does the account balance say today? What does the, you know, past couple weeks look as far as lose, gain, whatnot? What should we be looking at long term to kind of, you know, see that progression, kind of get that, you know, maybe a little bit of dopamine hit that, hey, we are actually doing something right, kind of check that box emotionally that we're moving ahead, but not going to lose sight of where we're trying to get to.
So the big thing is we all want to start with a plan, because when you've got a plan in place, whether that's for the next 10 years, the next 15, 20, 30, whatever, you can set up those benchmarks along the way. Because as we are sitting down, as we're going through that that financial planning aspect of things, what we really do is say, okay, 20 years into the future, this place is where I want to be. I want to be able to be retired in order to have that lifestyle that I want in retirement. Here is what I need for that cash flow to happen, both on the in and on the out. So how do I get to that point? And we back, we reverse engineer, we back engineer all of that to say, to get to X dollars per month, that takes Y amount of assets. You have Z amount of assets today. Let's say, okay, from today out 20 years, to get to that total amount of assets, what you have today, you've got to put away, you know, $300 a month, and we have to average over the next 20 years an 8.5% growth rate.
Okay.
What we've got to do then is 4 years out, 8 years out, 12 years out, 16 years out, build in those benchmarks. This is where we need to be at each of these time frames, so that in the next 4 years, if we are just at or just under maybe that benchmark, we can say, okay, here's what's gone on in the market. Here's what we've maybe left on the table by not having enough risk. Here's what we need to maybe adjust in our risk tolerance over the next 4 years. Okay. To make that next benchmark. Or I've had folks that in those first 4 years of that plan, my goodness, we saw four amazing years in the market, and we actually blew through the year four number, that year four benchmark, where I've had to say, let's put on the brakes a little bit, though, because I don't know what the next 4 years are going to look like. Let's get to that point. Well, the next 4 years, there are a couple of down years in there. So they're coming into year eight going, oh, my goodness, I feel so far behind. Well, actually, because of how good those first four were, even though we had a couple of rough ones in these last four, we're still on track, right? We're still benchmarking to say, yes, this is where we need to be. And obviously, you need to actually look at that plan more often than every 4 years. But that's a good amount of time to be able to say, where is my plan headed? Have I needed to take a detour to go around something? Have I maybe been rerouted, right? Because we saw actually yesterday, right? If you were trying to go from Colorado Springs to Denver at the wrong time of day, I-25 was shut down through Castle Rock. You had to go around some way, shape, or form. So we can have that initial plan. We may have to take a detour to get to that ultimate destination along the way, but we've got to be checking those benchmarks to do it. That's why the long haul matters. We can't just be looking at, well, what's going on this week or this month or this last quarter and make these big, broad, sweeping changes as a result.
Yeah, and it seems unfortunate because a number of, you know, the websites or, you know, the apps to at least, you know, see how this is going seem to really emphasize those pie charts, those dot charts that'll show the big swoop down, but not actually the, you know, little number that says, actually, you're, you know, long term, you're actually doing all right.
Right. Right. It's very easy to look at that short term number versus the long term number in there. And the other piece of that that I will throw out here as well, as we were coming into 2023, I cannot tell you how many analysts, how many economists that I was listening to thinking these guys are totally, totally off their rocker, because there were a lot of folks thinking that in 2023, we're going to see a negative 10, a negative 15% return in the market for the year. Historically speaking, we don't get back-to-back double-digit down years. Mm-hmm. We might get one double-digit down and one maybe a minus one or a minus two. But historically, we don't get two big down back-to-back years. So that's where my first little sensor went off of, you guys are looking at this short term. You're looking at 2022 thinking 2023 is going to be worse. Mm-hmm. We've got to have that long-term concept in mind. And there are folks that I know, different advisors out there, who, in listening to those things, made changes in their portfolios to go, okay, we're going to batten down the hatches, assume that the worst is yet to come, and we're going to make those changes that way. The folks who stuck to their guns, who had their convictions and stuck to it in terms of the asset allocation, actually have seen 2 and 3 times the returns this year. And it's not to say that they're 2 and 3 times the returns what the market has gotten, but they've actually gotten consistent market returns versus folks who have maybe only returned 30% of what the market is, because they're looking at that long term, sticking with those long range convictions, knowing that, you know, you get a year. We saw it last year. You get a year where something like your large cap growth is down 30%. Oh my goodness, large cap's going to be horrific. Well, large cap as a sector is one of the best performing sectors mm-hmm. this year. So you can't just cut out everything. It's that old adage of cutting off your nose to spite your face, right? You're going to say, that's it. I'm getting that totally out of the portfolio. Well, you took the whole big down, right? You mm-hmm. jumped off the roller coaster and you missed the up.
Yeah. Another thing that, you know, could kind of fall into that category of cutting off your nose despite your face as well, is we've seen kind of this uptick thanks to, you know, the smartphones and things like that, of a little bit more day trading, a little bit more fun, you know, kind of a little bit more rolling the dice. And sometimes people might get a little out of hand of that and say, you know, hey, I have just, you know, let's call it play money, just something, you know, I'm okay to lose. But then all of a sudden they start getting real high and trying to mm-hmm. double down. And all of a sudden, what you had to lose becomes too emotionally hard. And then you're putting everything else in jeopardy.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's two pieces of the same coin. Oftentimes, folks will think about that play money, right, as the same kind of money that they would take to Cripple Creek or to Black Hawk, that, hey, I'm going to take, you know, this $100, I'm taking $500 to Vegas mm-hmm. and I'm going to double my money. And that 500, you're down to 4, then you're down to 3. And you know what? I'm going to start doing the double or nothings, you know, on this. I'm going to double down on this next blackjack hand. And all of a sudden, you've lost more than you could afford to lose. And that's one of those things we start to see that the way that, and we can go into all the fun brain chemistry pieces in here and the addictive side of that gambling. Folks think about that day trading as if they were on their gambling side of things. And the reality of it is, even if you're going to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to, you know, play in the day trading a little bit, I'm going to put $500 in and do this on my own. A, you still want to do some research into what you're putting your money in. Just because, you know, Roaring Kitty says something about it on Reddit doesn't necessarily mean you need to take Roaring Kitty's advice. Because believe it or not, those the meme stock plays are not necessarily good for anybody except the guy who created it and started getting everybody else to follow. Because guess which one bought in low and you're driving the price up for? Right? It's him.
Yeah, Mr. R. Kitty.
Yes, yes, Mr. R. Kitty. And in that process, you've also got to think what are my outs, right? When am I going to get out? Not just on the downside, like, okay, I'm only going to let this go down 10% before I sell, take that loss and move on, but also on the upside. Because many times I have seen folks who have been in, who have ridden something up really nicely, and they've said, oh, you know what? Yes, I'm up 30, 40, 50%, but I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep letting this go. I'm not going to cash this out because I am on such a roll. And a week or two later, it's all the way back down to where they started because they didn't have an exit strategy with that either. So having that strategy, playing by those rules, right? I tell folks all the time, the house always wins. Right? We think about that from the gambling side. The house always wins. So if you're somewhere and you are one of those gamblers and you're out there and you're playing blackjack, have your rules. Know when you're going to hit, when you're going to stay, and at what level you're going to walk away from the table, both on the up and the down. Same thing in a poker game. Right? If you've got a group of buddies and you're just having a little fun with some Texas Hold'em, you know, you're playing for the chips because, well, you brought the chips, right? There's no actual buy-in, but you're having a little fun. Have rules and stick to them because, believe it or not, those are all statistically based games. And when you're playing the statistics properly, you can do well because you're doing things in a logical, rational way. But when we get emotional about it, you know, I'm going all in because I got a pair of deuces and there are a pair of threes on the board. So I've got two pair. Well, somebody else might have a third three that you're not thinking about, yeah. But you're thinking about, oh, I got a great hand.
Well, and kind of using that same kind of casino mindset as well, too, there's also a big issue where a lot of people kind of get caught up in, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past, is, you know, you see one machine going off, and then all of a sudden everybody runs over there and tries to say, oh, this is the hot area. I got to get in over here where it's hot and just kind of following everything and just kind of trying to, you know, Johnny come lately on a lot of these type of opportunities.
Yep, exactly. That's the whole herd mentality, right? If everybody else is making money this way, I should be making money that way too. I'm going to go jump in and we see that, right? We see all the time where folks want to just buy into whatever that popular trend is. Whatever that investment fad is. We saw this actually through the early 2000s in what you would call the REIT world. That's the real estate investment trust. That was the time when, oh my goodness, everybody's buying into REITs and nobody understood what they were, how they worked. They could on paper show you a 7% return year over year, but nobody asked if that 7% return was actual growth in the investment or, you know, maybe you had a year where there was 1% growth, so they returned 6% of your investment to you. How do you get that magic working, right? What is that math behind there? So there's that whole, you know, we're going to do it because somebody else said it was a good idea. We've got to sit down, actually, and think about what is the rationale for doing these things, right? If you think about what we've seen just in the last few years in the cryptocurrency world, right? We saw virtually every cryptocurrency within the last 18 months lose 60%+ of their value and never come back.
Wait, I thought that was the future.
Well, no, that was 2021 and 22. That's the past now. Okay. But back in 2011, that was the future. But now we look and it's the past. It's a fad, right? It's Beanie Babies, right? Beanie Babies as a kid, everybody's going to McDonald's, getting the Beanie Babies. Got to leave the tag on it because it's going to be worth something one day.
Go get that plastic protector so you don't bend up the tag either.
Yes, yes. Can't be doing that. You know, when I was a kid, it was all about the baseball cards.
Yeah.
Because we all heard our parents talk about our grandparents who threw away my Mickey Mantle rookie. And boy, if I'd still had that now. So we kept everything. You know, at one point in time, I had about 10,000 baseball cards. They've been whittled down to maybe 1,200 at this point that have any kind of value other than, you know, sentimental.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea here is that those fads, those trends are going to stop over time, but there are certain things that are, right? We look at that last thing we talked about, right? Not having that long-term outlook. There are certain things that over a length of time, whether that's 10 years, 20, 30, whatever, work. We've got to keep that long-term piece in there. We can't just look at that speculative behavior cycle where, you know, what's the next thing the guy's going to hit the buzzer about and tell me I need today?
Or is it something where, you know, it's an artificially created market just to have somebody profit, like, you know, the Beanie Babies and, you know, early day eBay trying to fuel that and kind of create a false idea of limited qualities and higher resale value. And really, it was just fantastic marketing.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that I often will talk with folks about is before we decide this is the investment we want to make, I've got to ask the question, who's profiting from my investment?
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that I have all the speculation on and somebody else is making money on me today? Or are there multiples of us in that same boat together, right? Are we putting things in there that, you know, I'm putting money in, my advisor also has money in similar ways, or my advisor has invested these folks that way, or the portfolio manager. And a lot of actual asset management companies do this. The portfolio manager has to have their own money in their portfolio.
Yeah.
That's that fiduciary side of it. I wouldn't do with somebody else's money what I won't do with my own.
Yeah.
I've got to think about how would I treat myself? How would I treat my mother? How would I treat my grandparents? How am I treating everybody else's so that I can see that it's all the same?
Well, and that goes back to, you know, that other part of it and kind of keeping on with this meme stock idea too is, you know, who are you getting that advice from? Are you getting advice from, you know, Roaring Kitty or someone who can sell you something fantastic on Reddit or somebody who can put together a flashy 20-30 second video on Instagram or TikTok with some kind of advice or, hey, here's your next big get rich? Or are you looking at somebody, like you said, that has that fiduciary, mm-hmm. you know, kind of requirement, that skin in the game, and also the training to know what to be looking at?
Yeah, and that's one of those things. Oftentimes, as I am out and I'm talking with folks, they'll ask me about the newest thing they saw here, the newest thing they saw there, and what do I think about this? Because I read XYZ in this particular newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is always, what do these folks have to gain from you making your decision? Because if they're not licensed, which typically means that the advice they give is not regulated, they can tell you anything at any time, and it doesn't have to be in your best interest, what's in it for them, right? Oftentimes we ask the WIFM, what's in it for me? We also have to ask, what's in it for them? What's in it for the one giving that advice to me? Do they stand to win just because I jumped in? Or do they stand to win because we're both going to win? Because they have money in the game as well, but it's not because they put money in the game 6 months ago and they're doing this to pump up a price of something. And, oh, by the way, they don't have licensing. They haven't taken the testing to do this. They're not being regulated by it. So they're not going to get hit hard when they pull out and they're no longer taking their own advice.
Yeah. Or worse yet, somebody who does have some of that training, some of the regulations, but are keep pushing you towards one certain product that may be offering, you know, a quarterly bonus on commissions for, you know, hey, if we get this amount of people in this target fund, we'll give you a little extra kickback.
Yeah, that's one of those other things. You know, one of the great pieces, one of those pieces of reforms in my world that FINRA and the SEC have made is that for those folks who are licensed, there's no more, hey, you sell XYZ and enough of that, we actually give you a trip to here or a trip to there or we'll send you a watch, or that has gone away in my side of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other people who I will say play in the pool that aren't exactly licensed to play in the pool, that still matters to them. So, folks, we are up against that final break in today's show. When we come back, we will wrap up with a couple of more of those common mistakes, how to avoid them. So stick around. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO News Radio. I'm Andrew Rogers, along with Rick Stevens. And Rick, before that break, you were talking about the things that have gone on in your side of the industry to make sure that there isn't, you know, that incentive to get your clients into a certain area. But there, you mentioned there are still some people that might kind of dabble around, kind of play in that pool, very adjacent to, that are still doing it. So how can you really tell the difference? And maybe, obviously, besides for, you know, the high sales pressure, maybe a bad plaid suit, what are some other ways to kind of maybe have some red flags as far as knowing if it's somebody who's actually legit, or, you know, kind of just in that gray area right around the shallow end of the pool?
Well, the first thing that I always tell folks is, regardless of who you're working with as an advisor, make sure that they are licensed as an advisor. So FINRA is that Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. They actually have what's called a broker check. Mm-hmm. And you can actually go in to that website. It is actually brokercheck.finra.com. FINRA.org, and that takes you to that page where you can put in the individual's name, and it'll ask for a CRD number. You don't have to know what the CRD number is. That's actually a number that each individual is given in their license. And you might know what their firm is, you might not. It doesn't matter. You can actually search without that. If you know the city or the state that they are in, you can put that in. So if you were to go look me up, you could actually put in, and this is where you've got to put in my full name. So you've got to put in Richard Stevens, right? And that's Stevens with a V. And from there, you can skip the firm if you want. If you don't want to skip it, you put in LPL Financial, because that is actually the name of the broker that we use. And on that city, type in Colorado Springs, and you will actually hit that search bar. From there, it's going to bring up a couple of different results. Mine is the first one. That's Richard Allen Stevens. That's me. And you click on that, and it's going to tell you all that you wanted to ever know about me in this world. It's going to tell you that I have 11 years of experience at two firms, and two firms is technically correct because I started at Waddell & Reed. Waddell & Reed was purchased by LPL, so even though my desk never moved, the FRS financial part never moved, our broker was purchased. So two different firms. Tells you I have passed three exams. If you actually click that box, it's a green box that tells you the exams, here's what you need to see.
Okay.
You need to see the general industry or the product exam should say either a Series 7, which is a general securities, or sometimes we call it a stockbroker license, or it'll be a Series 6. The Series 6 is the mutual fund license. Okay. You can deal in mutual funds if you have a Series 7, because mutual funds are made up of individual securities.
Okay.
So you can deal in that world. The other one, the very important one, is the one above that. That's the one that says IA. Right, there's a blue circle, says IA. That mm-hmm. stands for investment advisor. That's either a Series 66 or it's a combination 63 and 65.
Okay.
That means that particular individual has a license, has a fiduciary duty to act as your advisor. They cannot be making recommendations based on how much they get paid out, what their bonus structure is like. They can't make recommendations because this product offered them an incentive and that one didn't. They have a fiduciary responsibility. So that is the first place I send everybody when you're looking at that individual. Now, does that mean everybody has those? No, there are some folks that actually operate at the state level. This is actually the federal licensing. The difference between state and federal licensing really comes down to the amount of assets that you manage. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go look at the exact numbers, but if I remember right, if you manage $50 million or less, you can be registered at the state. If it's $150 million and above, you're registered federally. If it's between $50 and $150, you have the choice of either one. We always looked at it as I'm going to get registered federally because even though I'm starting my practice and I have nobody who's invested their assets with me, at some point in time, I want to get to that point where I'm required to be federally registered. So we'll just do the federal register right now. There's a lot more oversight at the federal level than there is at that state level as well. So I always tell folks, look for that licensing. Are they Series 6 or 7? And are they a 63, 65, or are they a 66? Either of those works well because especially that 63, 65, or 66, that's about being the investment advisor.
Okay.
The other part, obviously, is you want to see, hey, are they registered to do business in my state? And you can find that on there as well. Whether they're an investment advisor, whether they are, sometimes you'll see a B next to it. That means they have a broker's license in that state. And depending on the firm, not all firms require an investment advisor license in every state if you only have an office in Colorado. Technically, we just have to be in Colorado licensed as an advisor. Texas requires you to be an advisor licensed for the state of Texas. And I think Tennessee requires you in Tennessee. Now, there are other states that we still have that investment advisor license in. Some of that is just because there's no cost to keep the IA in there. Some of that is we've had folks from Colorado move there. So initially, you've got to get that license. And then because you don't have an office in that state, you don't have to keep it there. So some things that obviously we will clean up. I think if I go through the actual count on number of states, we're licensed like 38. So we can do business with folks in a lot of different places, but that's where you want to go. You want to go to that brokercheck.finra.org to check out, is this person trying to give me advice, licensed to actually give me advice?
All right. And then another big misconception is maybe some of the repercussions either beforehand or afterwards and getting Uncle Sam involved. If we're talking about federal regulations, eventually the feds are going to want to get their piece of the pie no matter what.
Yes. Yes. There's the folks at the IRS love the mutual fund world. Mm-hmm. One of those reasons they love the mutual fund world is if you are in a non-retirement account. So that's just a regular investment account. Whether that's your own personal account, it could be a TOD, which is a transfer on death account. It could be a joint account that you have. Maybe it's an account you've set up for your kids as an UTMA. They like those accounts that get taxed every year for the capital gains because mutual funds as a product will revalue themselves every December, and they're going to pay out capital gains based on the trades that happened inside of those funds. So every once in a while, you get a year like we saw in 2022 where the market was down, but there were some funds that because people were cashing out, they had to actually create some liquidity in these funds. They had to sell off some long-term holdings so those capital gains get distributed to all of the shareholders. And your account may have been down 20%, but some of those funds took an 8 or 10% capital gain in them because they bought things 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and they had appreciated over that time. That's one of those things that we don't always think about, don't always consider properly as we are headed into, especially that end of the year. The other thing that we see often is folks aren't doing what we call tax loss harvesting, which means maybe in my account is up for the year, but there might be certain funds that are down in that account that I could actually sell off now, put that money into a different fund. It doesn't have to be 100% different. It could be something as simple as Company A's large cap growth fund sold off into Company B's large cap growth fund. But because they're two different companies, the IRS sees that as two different investments.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe I took a $600, $700, $800 capital loss, even though my account is up. I've taken that and I've harvested it for tax purposes, because that can then count against any capital gains that I may have had in some other things I've sold off. Mm-hmm. It may be able to count against the income that I've generated for that year. And I'm basically doing what we call resetting the basis.
Yeah.
I am now setting that new, here is my new buy-in number, and we're going to work this, moving it forward. And that's that opportunity where you want your both your advisor and your tax pro talking about what's the best way to make this happen. What yeah. makes the most sense in this area? One of those products that actually doesn't deal with that, though, the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds, or sometimes they're called ETPs, exchange-traded mm-hmm. products, those operate more like the stock, and you're not hit with that capital gain until you actually sell inside of it. So there are a variety of different strategies that can be used in that big picture to really help mitigate some of those tax issues. And we see it as well when folks inherit different accounts as well. Oftentimes you get that reset in basis, or that step up, as we'll call it sometimes. And maybe grandma and grandpa had, you know, $20,000 put away 15 years ago that's now grown to $120,000. Grandma and grandpa have passed. You've inherited the account. Rather than inheriting their original $20,000 basis, you now get that $120,000 basis, and you're only dealing with the gains up above.
Mm-hmm.
So having that perspective, knowing where everything is, talking with that tax pro, talking with that advisor to figure out really what is that best strategy for taking care of my whole big picture. Well, folks, that is the time we've got this week on Money Matters. We've been talking about those common mistakes. If you're not sure whether or not you're making some of those mistakes, you're always welcome to give me a call. We'll sit down. We'll go over where you're at, what you've got going on. There's absolutely no cost, totally complimentary to sit down and talk about that. Education is where that heart is. I want to make sure you know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and whether or not it makes that sense. So feel free to give me a call, 719-500-8700. I think I'm number three or number four there, Andrew, on that phone train. I'm telling you, I still got to call myself through that number to see where I'm at on that phone
Either train. Either way, we got to get those numbers up.
Yes, yes, we got to get that in there. Send me that email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com. However you want to reach out, we are always happy to sit down, have that conversation. Absolutely no cost to do that whatsoever in making sure that you guys are doing good job taking care of your money. We will be back again next week continuing to talk about your money, because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.